Joe, I'm excited to announce that I have two members from Extinction Rebellion with me here, Justin and Kim. Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, Martha. Thanks so much for having us.
That's fantastic. I can hear you. Hello.
Yeah, thanks, Martha. Thanks so much for having us today.
So thanks for coming to the studio. This is an extra treat. So let's talk a little bit about what Extinction Rebellion is and how it got started for people who don't know.
Okay, so Extinction Rebellion started in the UK. It grew out of the Rising Up movement. It was an activist group in the UK for environmental adjustment and reform. And two members, Dr. Gail Bradbrook, who's a microbiophysicist by trade, and Roger Hallam. They got together and started Extinction Rebellion, and they started with their first action in late fall of 2018, blocking bridges in London, and it just since then, it's spread to, I think now, as of April 2019, it's in 650 groups in 45 countries. So it's probably grown since then.
And it's really big in Australia and New Zealand, is that right? There's a lot of activity there.
Yes, I believe it, yes, in Australia, New Zealand, of course, the UK. There's in Mexico, India. I mean, there's if you just. I actually opened an Instagram account just to follow all the Extinction Rebellion groups.
Oh, really?
Throughout the world, and it's just so inspiring every day just to go through and see how many
groups there are.
Yeah, it's great.
So one of the things that really drew me to it, a lot of the listeners to Live Culture are artists and makers of things, and what distinguishes Extinction Rebellion other than its serious mission about getting people to pay attention to the climate emergency is the creativity with which these protests or manifestations take place, including, tell me about some of the includings. I've been following them on The Guardian, but you guys know better than I do.
Well, there's all sorts of course, there's roadblocks, but as far as art, you know, Extinction Rebellion, we are here to tell the truth, and that's our first demand, but it's not just facts that win people, it's hearts and minds, and we want to engage people to reflect culture back to them, but also just to see that we can create something different together.
Mm-hmm.
And so one group that I love from the UK is the Red Brigade, and they are these very ethereal figures. They have white face paint and these beautiful red draped outfits, and they move very slowly and they're silent, and they just make people pause and watch, and they move very slowly and point, and they really hold space for the grief of,
so it's a performative.
Yeah
Yeah, and you know, some of the art that I've seen from the UK that I really appreciate, and just from Europe in general, is there were a group of young people standing on ice blocks with their head in nooses, waiting for the ice to melt for themselves,
right,
to be hung as a, you know, an analogy for the coming crisis. As, you know, the ice melts, we get closer and closer to our own extinction. And
it's so graphically powerful.
Yeah, it's right. Really radical art in the sense that it's causing people to really get outside of their normal sense of awareness. They're becoming more acutely aware to the emergency that's happening, mm-hmm, underneath their feet, literally.
Right. Well, so the social sculpture aspect of this, of taking protest out into the streets and then making things that are really visually compelling to sort of stick in people's minds, is one of the things that I like. You've staged a couple of die-ins, and there was one where you had people lie down on the skating rink at Rockefeller Center, and put a big banner up on Rockefeller Center. So
yeah, so that was our XRNYC's first action. So the XR entity has many chapters. There's a, mm-hmm, U.S. national chapter. There's many chapters within New York State. There's a New York City chapter. And so New York City, on our first unveiling of our movement in America, decided that we would occupy the ice rink with Rockefeller's name, who's obviously his legacy still continues. The fossil fuel industry is alive and well.
It certainly is.
And, you know, showing up and choosing to put our bodies down is, for us, an important first symbolic step in getting people to recognize that there is something going on. Our overall tactic is to get mobilization, is to get as many people out and involved as are willing.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to do this because if you can't disrupt, if you can't start to really refuse the status quo, you can't begin to alter it. And so we have this dual process where we're trying to create and visually represent a new world.
Mm-hmm.
The UK had this really great garden boat where they had a boat with lots of flowers and plants. And
it was sort of utopian project.
Right, exactly. Right. And so to build utopia, we have to envision it. And the only way to share that narrative is through art. And so our artistic element is just as important to us as our disruption element. And so while we're willing to put our bodies down, we also have to be willing to raise up something for folks who don't necessarily have that privilege.
And people need hope and to see what the possibilities are. I think that's the other thing. I believe we all know that there is a problem. Most of us know that there's a problem. But
we would hope.
But how to get larger forces to do something. So I think, you know, most of the people that I know individually, we're all making efforts to try and, you know, use less plastic or, you know, less water. I mean, all kinds of things. But it's really not us. It's giant corporations. It's governments. It's bigger forces. So, you know, it's
It's not our job to. I mean, of course, we are personally responsible, but we operate within systems.
Right.
The
right.
systems need are the things that need the change.
My anxiety about the recycling and the landfill that I'm creating, I think it's, you know, useful for me to pay attention to it and to be responsible for what I'm throwing out. But really, it's this sort of giant machine of things that are destroyed needlessly and made needlessly.
Right.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that was really interesting in some of the information that you gave me were some data from Dr. Erica Chenoweth about why and how nonviolent civil disobedience works.
Mm-hmm.
And according to you guys, or according to her, it takes mobilizing just 3.5% of the population to achieve a system change. And the examples that you gave me were the suffragettes, Gandhi, and the civil rights movement in the U.S. And that's really incredible. That's actually quite...
That's quite empowering.
empowering. Like, yeah, we actually could do. And I believe that right now, as we speak, Greta Thunberg and a lot of teenagers were yesterday protesting outside of the UN. She arrived the other day by boat.
Yep.
And it's very heartening to see so many young people actively involved in spontaneous protests. Like, I assume it was spontaneous, sitting out there. Yeah.
Well, actually, those protests are organized weekly. There's a Friday for Future group, and it's a bunch of teen activists who get outside of the UN and cut school every Friday and sit outside with their signs. And we've been lucky enough to have some relationships with some of those young folks. And Greta has come to be a part of it to some extent. And, you know, it's just one part of our 3.5%, you know, all the other groups that are doing that work. And the youth have done terrific work organizing and educating themselves.
That's great, because I have to say that in all of my protesting, marching in New York and in D.C., I do see some younger people and some families, but a lot of the people are kind of gray-haired and older. And it's been great to see. And it's unfortunate that things have to get so bad before this happens, but I've been seeing more and more younger people. So, for instance, at the women's marches, it's been getting younger and younger, which is really heartening, because it's, you know, they are going to have to take that over pretty soon, sooner than I would like. So tell me about the specific actions that you have in New York, just for there you have something ongoing at the New York Times. You've given me a paper copy of a sort of potential version of the New York Times. But just give me an overview of some of what you're doing.
Yeah, so we have had so far two official actions that we consider our events. One was at Rockefeller Center. One was at the New York Times building. We have an ongoing weekly protest at the New York Times where we send members in demanding that they tell the truth in a way that's genuine, one that meets a standard that we've written up.
And what format does that take?
So, I've been there and I've done it. And the first time, it was one of the first times, and we went in with some poster boards with our demands written out. And we just tried to hand out information to the writers. Mm-hmm. And, we just wanted to encourage the writers to really try to adopt these standards. Obviously, there's some internal differences in some of the writing staff of the New York Times. There are some conservatives. There are climate deniers who write columns and opinions. And it's an opinion piece, so obviously it's they don't report the climate deniers as facts always. But it's not necessarily they haven't committed to the truth. And so that's part of our motivation for being there is to truly get commitment from the truth. Right now, the New York Times. They have this oil and energy conference they do each year, and they're clearly bought. Still, they're not willing to commit into a real practice of making the emergency as notable as it should be.
And visually, how does this manifest itself? I saw pictures of people sitting and reading newspapers in chairs outside of the building. Is that normally what it would look like?
The other day we had a lot of people dress up in makeup and garb and in costumes and do a performative action similar to the one Kim explained.
The red outfits with the white face?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
No, not the Red Brigade, but this was people who were dressed in kind of gala attire, if you want to say their interpretation of that.
Evening gowns?
Well, it was made with trash bags to look like oil.
Right.
So people were kind of embodying that, this event, this oil and money event.
Oh, so it was specifically about the oil event.
May I share the media demands that we have?
Absolutely. That would be quite helpful.
Okay, so there are six. The first is climate headlines daily. Second, climate everywhere, every beat, every story. Third, suggest real solutions. Fourth, use climate emergency language.
What is climate emergency language?
To not use global warming, climate change, as those don't call to attention the emergency that we're in.
The crisis level of it.
The absolute crisis that we're in. And it minimizes it. So, we want...
Okay, I'm sorry, I stopped you.
It's okay.
Keep going with the demands. Keep going with the demands.
The fifth, enact climate standards for political endorsements. Mm-hmm. And sixth, remove conflicts of interest. So this past Thursday, and that's when the media demands actions happen at the New York Times, our Thursday mornings, we were focusing on that sixth demand to remove conflicts of interest. So
that's an important one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a really particularly challenging one because most institutions have financial ties to fossil fuels, to infrastructure that's incredibly problematic and destructive. And this is one of the this ties back into our principles of really challenging the toxic systems, because it's not just the New York Times, it's almost every institution, academic institutions. So many of these places have this buy-in. And it's just symbolic of this overarching issue that everything is founded in fossil fuels and founded in our own destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's not fossil fuels, it appears to be opioids, which is the other big one that's on all of the boards of museums and so forth.
Yeah, military industrial complex as well.
Yeah. So you're listening to Live Culture. I'm your host, Martha Willette Lewis, and this is, of course, WPKN Bridgeport 89.5 FM and streaming online at WPKN.org. This will be available as a podcast afterwards on SoundCloud. And I am lucky enough to be here today with Kim and Justin from Extinction Rebellion, which is a climate emergency protest group that uses creativity and strong visuals to get their point across. It's a global movement at this point, and these guys are from the New York branch of it. And it's a non-hierarchical organization, as I understand it. And Justin, your title is regenerative culture coordinator. So can you talk just for a few minutes about what that title would be? And then afterwards, Kim, I'd like you to talk about your title.
So we in Extinction Rebellion are like are non-hierarchical and decentralized, meaning that we try to promote leaders. We try to allow people to take initiative and really do this work for themselves in a way that's accessible to them. So not everybody has 40 hours a week to commit to climate activism, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. We totally understand that. And so regenerative culture is a foundational element of the movement. It's one that, you know, a lot of activist environments are really draining, really emotionally taxing. There's a lot of emotional labor that goes into it.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, there's ideology at stake. There's something that's so critical to people's identity and to their sense of safety that it really is taxing work. And a lot of the time when people get involved in activism, it's because their lives are literally on the line, and for them to exist is radical. And so to create a regenerative culture is one in which every person can participate in a way that's accessible to them, you know? And not only one that's accessible, but one that's trying to promote and create a world that's beautiful, one that's accepting, that's mm-hmm. egalitarian, that really is accepting of people's identities and individuality, as well as promoting collective communities and ones that support each other. And so as a coordinator, all I do is try to facilitate meetings and the subgroups and help them do their work.
Okay.
I don't necessarily control their work. I don't make decisions about what work gets done or what doesn't. My job is just to try to make sure that all of the things that are under our mandate or under the sections of the work we do is getting done, so that way it can best affect and help the rest of our movement.
Okay. So Kim read out loud the set of demands that were for the New York Times particularly, but on the XR website you can see a set of, there's 10...
We have 10 principles, but 4 demands.
10 principles and 4 demands, and as I understand it, if one agrees to those, one may create an action on one's own in the name of Extinction Rebellion. Is that correct?
Yeah, ideally.
More or less.
Ideally, we have this system in place where we wouldn't do anything unless we know it won't affect another group.
Right.
So,
yeah, presumably not hurting other people in the part of it.
So if even like the implication, like if you wanted to do an action, right? If you wanted to do an action and you didn't alert the media and messaging team, it could hurt their work. And so you shouldn't do an action unless you know that you're not going to cause anybody extra trouble.
Right.
And so it's one of those things where, yeah, sure, if you can do something all on your own and you can act within the demands and the principles, we definitely encourage people to show up and communicate with us what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to not approve or disapprove of anything. We want to encourage that.
Can you tell me off the top of your heads what the 10 and the 4 are?
Yeah. So the 4 demands are to tell the truth,
mm-hmm.
act now, meaning that the government halts biodiversity loss and mm-hmm. reduce greenhouse gas emissions to net zero by 2025. We go beyond politics, meaning we create a citizens' assembly or people's assembly, which is a group of people making decisions like a government body, mm-hmm. discussing policies. And this is because governments have historically failed people. Mm-hmm. Governments have historically betrayed marginalized groups, especially in America. And our 4th demand is a just transition, which is prioritizing vulnerable people, poor communities, people of color, indigenous communities, and giving reparations for all of the history of oppression, the history of environmental destruction that's happened to those people already.
Mm-hmm.
And then our principles.
That's particular, sorry to interrupt, but that 4th demand, that's the U.S.'s. The UK doesn't have that.
Right.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Our working principles, because we are a principled movement, is that we have a vision of change.
Mm-hmm.
We set our mission on what is necessary, meaning mobilizing the right amount of people.
Right.
We need a regenerative culture, which I've talked a little bit about.
Mm-hmm.
We challenge ourselves in the toxic system, meaning that we're looking inwards at the inherited patriarchy, the inherited white supremacy, mm-hmm. the inherited destruction. and we try to challenge that within ourselves and our systems. We value reflection and learning, meaning we're always open to transforming, hearing, taking feedback, and trying to change.
Mm-hmm.
We welcome everyone and every part of one into Extinction Rebellion, meaning that people come to this at different places, and
right,
we want to work
right.
with everyone. We actively mitigate for power, meaning breaking down our historic hierarchies.
Mm-hmm.
We avoid blaming and shaming, so about individuals throwing away plastic. We try not to blame and shame those people.
Right.
We try not to blame and shame people.
You assume that people are doing what they can.
Yeah, and best intentions. Yeah. Right, in good faith. We are a nonviolent movement, which means we use the tactic nonviolence as our strategy. We try to cause the least harm to ourselves and our members. And we're based on autonomy and decentralization.
Fantastic. So one of the things that Kim and I had spoken about a little bit before was the fact that some people come to this and they take training sessions and they go to actions where they might get arrested. But there's all kinds of other things that one can do if that's not a possibility as well. For instance, I don't know, if you're a parent with small children, that may not be an option for you. You need to be home at the end of the day. So there's all kinds of ways that one could participate, were one interested, that don't involve that direct...
Definitely. Yeah, there's, of course, as Extinction Rebellion, we are a nonviolent civil disobedience group. And so the people who are willing to put their bodies on the line, we welcome them, but we understand we don't expect or shame or blame anyone if they can't. There's so much other work behind the scenes that needs
right.
to be done to support, like, you know, making art,
right.
doing research, social media support. There's so much, there's so much energy that goes into actually having the actions happen. The actions are just like a very small part.
So I think of it as like running a theater event, live theater
That's
event.
A great
and
analogy.
So there's all of the people backstage, you know, script writers and people who are making sure that the other people can get into their costumes and fitters and all of the PR work that goes into it and investigating the site beforehand and making sure that things are going to run properly.
Exactly.
There's all kinds of things.
Yes, and every part is very essential and important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just finding, we have so many places that people can enter, so we welcome if people want to just... attend or watch a Heading for Extinction and What to Do About It talk.
Mm-hmm. And there is one on YouTube, I believe,
yes,
as well.
That's Dr. Gail Bradbrooks. That is an excellent talk. Just to warn people, the talk has since changed a bit. She compares the climate crisis to the Holocaust and that, and we're very aware that's insensitive and offensive to people, so it's since changed.
Okay.
And there's a little information about a fact about puffins that's inaccurate in it. So just
okay, a few things.
Yeah,
all
just
right.
a few
well,
things. But other than that, it's
that.
Great.
And you, Kim, are part of the creative team.
Yes.
And so what is your... I realize we're talking about a non-hierarchical organization, but what is your title? Or what are you primarily occupied with
I'm part of the arts collective. I had been a co-coordinator of the arts group, and it felt like just out of, the air we breathe, the water we swim in is like, it was becoming like, oh, well, can we do this? Can we do that? So it's like, no, we need to just be here to really facilitate people to, you know, bottom line projects, and we'll support. So that's when we formed an arts collective. I take care of a lot of, you know, emails and behind the scenes stuff for the arts group, let people know when we're having art builds,
mm-hmm.
And then just coordinate within the subgroup. So we have Wednesday nights, we have a postering group,
mm-hmm.
Thursday nights, a group that works on these big puppets, and then an arts inventory group that meets on the weekends. And we're looking to just constantly be growing and having days of the week where people can just show up and make stuff.
So for people who are interested, you have a quite good setup on social media. So XRNYC is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And what is the website?
So for New York, it's xrebellion.nyc.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, it's we're XRNYC. Instagram, at XR_NYC, and that's also Twitter, XR_NYC. And then if you want to see Extinction Rebellion, just, you know, the original Extinction Rebellion's website, it's rebellion.earth. And that they have, their website is just a wonderful resource and has so much inspiration. So,
And if you're listening to this from somewhere that you want to find a local chapter, you can go to extinctionrebellion.us to find any U.S. local chapter as well.
Right, which is what I did to find you guys.
That's great.
In fact, yes.
It works.
It does. It works. So one of the things that I, you know, drew me to Extinction Rebellion in the first place was some of the actions in the U.K. Like, there's been a lot about the textile and garment industry and insta fashion and how really damaging that is for the environment and how much clothing is just destroyed by high-end manufacturers who don't want their high-end clothing line to be sold for less. And so Extinction Rebellion took over Fashion Week this year in a truly impressive display, which involved lots of fashion and kind of voguing in front of people, including these incredible coats that I thought were made out of green feathers, but it wasn't. It was very fine grass grown in slightly differing shades, so they made stripes that they made these incredible coats that had the Extinction Rebellion logo on the back, which is a kind of X that makes a sand
hourglass.
Yeah. Just lost the word there. Incredibly beautiful. No, but it was also funny, smart, and really in your face, and it really brought attention to the problem in a way that was also, you know, protest, but I would say kind of enjoyable protest, because it was so striking, so visually compelling.
Yeah, and that's something that's very important to us is, of course, to be serious and to, of course, raise, of course, fact and protest and criticism. But we want people to have fun. This is so heavy and dark, but it's like, how do we mobilize together and uplift each other, you know?
Yeah.
How can we criticize or call for change in a way that is regenerative?
And it's not just pointing fingers and yelling at people angrily.
No.
Because we get enough anger from the current administration and from all different kinds of other places.
It's depleting. Anger is just exhausting. Of course, it's
exhausting,
You know, it's anger.
We need
is
it.
Necessary.
Right. And but we should be very angry about what's happening.
Definitely. But there's just like, what's behind the anger? Mm-hmm. You know, what's driving the anger? And I was so drawn to XR because of how ingrained regenerative culture is. Like, the arts group, a lot of us are like, this is regenerative for us. You know, this is building community and making things together and just sharing ideas. And I feel so much better after arts meetings. I might be exhausted and on my way there and like, oh, I can't believe, you know, we're going to have 3 hours. And then I'm like, I'm so glad I'm here.
Right.
Know?
And with these people.
Yeah.
With
it's, these people. It's wonderful.
So Justin, you sent me something really lovely before we had this show. I didn't talk to you beforehand, but I did talk to Kim a little bit before. But you said, you sent me a bit about yourself, and the last part says, while I love to paint and play the guitar and sing songs, those are my practices for joy, and my creativity and artistic practice comes from being present in the world. I think that's really lovely and kind of says it all. So you, in addition to coordinating people, you are a maker of things as well, but you've also sort of taken this on as a kind of art.
Yeah, I think to be an artist, to be a creative person is something I've always been really fascinated with and always been engaged with my whole life. You know, I'm very privileged and lucky to have grown up in a family that values arts and creativity. Mm-hmm. And I've been exposed to lots of different varieties and genres of things my whole life. And I've never been able to really find a way to be creative in a way that feels expressive of what's really going on inside of myself and my mind and my heart. And, you know, a lot of art that I'm interested in really challenges the white patriarchal standard, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm really attracted to the histories of the avant-garde and, you know, the anti-capitalist art that's really critical of what has been going on our planet for the last 200 years, you know, mass genocide, slavery, colonialism, et cetera. And so for me as an artist the best way that I can be creative is to make creative decisions with my life and with my body. And mm-hmm. a creative decision to me is making one that is unique or different from previous decisions. So for me to move away from the history of white male oppression is a creative choice.
Yes.
And so for me to be an artist, the best thing I can do is just to change myself and to transform myself. And that creativity is difficult to access. It's hard, and it requires vision, which mm-hmm. is just like painting or sculpting right. or anything. And so, you know, like I said, I play guitar. I cook a lot as an art, and I paint. I've done all of these things, but they don't really capture the essence of transformation, of breaking down the elitism of art that I've been trying to pursue. And so to become an artist that actually feels like impactful, or even impactful on myself, I have to just focus on my own choices. And that's really where I derive most of my creativity from.
Yeah, I think as artists, we need to find ways to be able to live with ourselves.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a little break. This is Live Culture on WPKN Bridgeport, 89.5 FM, and streaming online at WPKN.org. I'm your host, Martha Ouellette Lewis. I am here in conversation with two members of Extinction Rebellion New York, Kim and Justin, and we're going to take a break and listen to a song. This is a new one from the 1975, and it uses a text read by Greta Thunberg. So, here we go.
We are right now in the beginning of a climate and ecological crisis, and we need to call it what it is, an emergency. We must acknowledge that we do not have the situation under control, and that we don't have all the solutions yet, unless those solutions mean that we simply stop doing certain things. We must admit that we are losing this battle. We have to acknowledge that the older generations have failed. All political movements in their present form have failed. But Homo sapiens have not yet failed. Yes, we are failing, but there is still time to turn everything around. We can still fix this. We still have everything in our own hands. But unless we recognize the overall failures of our current systems, we most probably don't stand a chance. We are facing a disaster of unspoken sufferings for enormous amounts of people. And now is not the time for speaking politely or focusing on what we can or cannot say. Now is the time to speak clearly. Solving the climate crisis is the greatest and most complex challenge that Homo sapiens have ever faced. The main solution, however, is so simple that even a small child can understand it. We have to stop our emissions of greenhouse gases. And either we do that or we don't. You say that nothing in life is black or white, but that is a lie, a very dangerous lie. Either we prevent a 1.5 degree of warming, or we don't. Either we avoid setting off that irreversible chain reaction beyond human control, or we don't. Either we choose to go on as our civilization, or we don't. That is as black or white as it gets. Because there are no gray areas when it comes to survival. Now we all have a choice. We can create transformational action that will safeguard the living conditions for future generations. Or we can continue with our business as usual and fail. That is up to you and me. And yes, we need a system change rather than individual change. But you cannot have one without the other. If you look through history, all the big changes in society have been started by people at the grassroots level. People like you and me. So I ask you to please wake up and make the changes required possible. To do your best is no longer good enough. We must all do the seemingly impossible. Today, we use about 100 million barrels of oil every single day. There are no politics to change that. There are no rules to keep that oil in the ground. So we can no longer save the world by playing by the rules. Because the rules have to be changed. Everything needs to change. And it has to start today. So everyone out there, it is now time for civil disobedience. It is time to rebel.
All right. So that was from the words out of Greta Thunberg's mouth. So I am here in conversation with Kim and Justin from Extinction Rebellion.
Hello.
Hello. And what did you think of that particular speech put to music?
I think it's extremely powerful. It's very moving. The whole climate crisis is just, I find it, you know, the grief is just, it's not like, okay, you grieve and then you move on. It's like, you grieve, you make a little bit of movement and you come back to the grief. And you
the,
come
grief
back
is,
to the grief
is
so
is,
heavy.
Is so heavy, right. So you had staged a funeral service in Prospect Park.
Yes. It was April 14th.
Yeah.
It was actually...
And that was for the grief.
It was actually the one-year anniversary of David Buckle's self-immolation in Prospect Park.
Yeah.
We did it very near that location. We didn't want to, of course, co-opt that out of respect for him and his family, but we were nearby to pay respects to him, and we were only able, just out of just capacity, to focus on the animals that had, the species that had gone extinct, not just animals, species, in the past 100 years. So just 1919 to April 2019, and I took on that project of matching images to the species, and
wow.
I was just, I can't tell you how much I was crying.
Yeah.
It was just, when it's not facts on a page, when you really see what has been lost, it's not what we're losing, it's what's already lost.
It's the particularities of data, so that you get to see the numbers. I think this is what, to talk about something completely different, Maya Lin's Vietnam Memorial does so beautifully. You have the mass number of names on the wall, so you get to see the numbers, but then you realize that each number is a very, very specific. It's somebody's child.
Yeah, it's a life.
And as you look at it, the surface is polished, so it's reflecting back at you, and you can see yourself in there. And that's really what the power of art is, versus somebody telling you a set of facts that you might know, and you might even kind of feel some of it, but really this takes it to a whole different level.
Yeah, it really, and that memorial for extinct species was just, that was probably my favorite, just because of what I'm drawn to, and I need to address that grief, because it's, you know, just to get through everyday life, it's like, okay, yeah, it's happening. But I need to get to work. I need to pay rent. I need to blah, 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 blah. And then you just, you know, you're facing the truth right there. And it's not that those other things aren't truth. They're true. We need to pay rent. We need to survive, of course. But
There are multiple realities.
Yeah. And we had space for the grief, and then Reverend Billy and some members of the Stop Shopping Choir joined us, mm-hmm. and they moved us from the very somber ceremony where we were reading the names of each, you know, species that we had researched and putting them into a cardboard coffin we had made. Then after Reverend Billy led a speech, and then he led us in procession across Prospect Park over to these trucks that are filled with glyphosate, which is Roundup, mm-hmm. Which is known, you know, yes. to be a very bad pesticide and toxin, a cancer-causing toxin. So we went over there, and he had an exorcism. So it was
fantastic.
It was very joyful.
And was there singing?
Yeah, we sang all the way across. Yeah. They sang, the Stop Shopping Choir, and Reverend Billy sang at our initial point, and then they led us in song across the park. It was wonderful.
Singing is very cathartic, and it feels really good. There's something about sound vibrations. One of the reasons that I do radio is actually because the music feels really good from the sound system here as I'm playing it. Yeah. And I play a kind of what I think of as a resistance dance mix, which is a kind of upper downer. So it kind of gets you energized. But at the same time, it's, you know, a lot of the songs are about things that are incredibly sad. And I think that's the kind of level of energy that we need to keep, which is, you know, we need to do something and we can do something.
Yeah.
But,
That ambivalence, you know, so much ambivalence. And,
it's an ambivalent moment.
Yeah.
So you had a good story apparently about the logo, which we had mentioned before, which is a very stylish looking thing. It's a circle with a large X in the middle of it.
Yeah. And it's actually, it's not Extinction Rebellion's logo. We, have been given permission by the artist who created it, who is a British artist, a London-based artist, ESP. Mm-hmm. And ESP actually developed this logo. It's a symbol for extinction. Mm-hmm. And that round circle is symbolic of the earth, and then inside it looks like an X, but it's actually a stylized hourglass.
Right, that's what I like about it. It really only uses type.
Yeah, it's super graphic.
It's also an image.
It's super graphic, and everyone that sees it's like, "What is that? So powerful!" You know, and it piques curiosity. And that artist has requested that that is free for all to use, but it cannot be used for commercial purposes ever. Can't be used for fundraising.
Oh, really?
Nope.
Okay.
That cannot be sold. That image is free for use, but it is not for commercial purposes.
So do you have objects that you use for fundraising? Do you have merchandise?
It's
never even occurred to me.
We don't really operate that way. We make shirts. We like make apparel. Sometimes we make things that, you know, we make buttons, but we really try not to sell.
You're giving things away. You give things away.
Yeah,
that's a better model.
There's a history of some of these more now mainstream organizations that are not movements that, you know, sell you a lot of things,
right,
and sell you a solution to
appease your guilt.
It's just, it's not a practice that we want to participate in at all.
Understood. Yeah. Understood. So let's talk really concretely, mm-hmm. because in September and October, lots of things are coming up.
Yes.
And I would also just like to mention that Oxfam for September has declared it, I can't remember exactly what they're calling it, but it's like no buying new clothes month, where you're to only go for used and recycled clothing, which is a lovely idea. I've been doing that since the beginning of the year with no ill effects.
Great. Yeah, actually, there is Extinction Rebellion also is having a boycott. They're asking people to pledge 52 weeks, 1 year, mm-hmm. to not buying any new clothes secondhand if mm-hmm. you need to buy something. And just a boycott of the fast fashion industry. And you can find out more information about that at xrfashionboycott.com if you're interested.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me what's happening in September and October. Give us the list.
There's a lot.
Well, yeah, so in September, many groups are doing many things during mm-hmm. the UN Climate Week.
And when is that? When is that? That's really soon,
it's
right?
September 23rd through 27th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so in between that week, you know,
get ready for everything.
Get ready. Yeah. You know, so we're we have members who are participating in that, and we'll definitely be around, and we'll do some affinity work. We're not planning a lot of these actions or a lot of these things that are happening, but you know, our members and you know, us as us who are, you know, very involved will definitely show up in some ways. Our big action is October 7th, though,
okay.
And that is in solidarity with an international day of rebellion.
Okay.
So cities across the world are going to be doing something.
If one looks at the XR NYC website or the XR US website, would one find ways of participating or see what's happening?
For
as
sure.
It's, okay.
Yeah, and the events. So on September 20th, that is, we'll be supporting the Global Youth Strike.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the Friday before the UN Climate Summit kicks off. And then on the 27th, at the closing of the UN Climate Summit, Earth Strike will do a general strike. And the 27th also happens to be the anniversary of Rachel Carson's Silent Spring.
Oh, wonderful.
So,
okay.
So, yeah. And then,
beautiful book.
Yes. So, yeah. And then on October 7th, the International Rebellion kicks off. And mm-hmm. before then...
And that's the big event that everybody should kind of be getting ready for if
yes.
they are planning on participating in it.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned another group, Kim, that mm-hmm. that you're Extinction Rebellion is friends with, or mutually supportive, I guess you said.
Yes.
It's Culture Declares Emergency. And I think we should talk about that for a minute, because that is entirely made up of creatives. And
yes.
it's a declaration that one believes that this is a climate emergency.
Yeah. So the Culture Declares Emergency organization is... It can be taken. The pledge can be taken on an individual level or an organizational level, and it's in alignment with a lot of what Extinction Rebellion does. But we're not. It's not committing to nonviolent direct action. It's committing to yes, there is an emergency. So, just some information off their website. Why declare? It's because climate and ecological emergency it's a happening, and the climate change. Crisis or the events are nonlinear. So, as we go on, feedback loops are forming, and we don't really know how fast things. We only have projections, but we really are in completely uncharted territory, and it's, you know, extremely dangerous. So, culture is a way to bring people from all different generations, backgrounds, classes, genders together. It's educational.
Well, I think of it as kind of like the glue of society. So if we didn't have art, I don't know how we'd be talking about so many things. And I don't know where people would be without, you know, restaurants, parks, theaters, all these other things that I think of as cultural production.
And it's, you know, this is just me saying from the side, this is not Culture Declares Emergency, but culture and art and are what really connect people to life, to their vitality. And a motto in Extinction Rebellion is rebel for life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're here for.
That's a beautiful sentiment, right?
You know, so,
because we don't want to be extinct and we don't want to see more things go. It's not a celebration of the negative.
No, it's fighting for what we love and care about and what we live for, you
mm-hmm.
know, and what makes us feel alive. And culture is, you know, anytime you ask somebody, oh, what do you love or what do you care about? It's almost always something that connects them to their life, their vitality.
Mm-hmm. So when you're making things mm-hmm. for various events, protests, whatnot, do you try to use materials that produce low impact? How does that work? That would be really difficult to do for large scale projects.
Ideally,
maybe paper mache.
Yeah. Ideally, well, that's like the service that we had for the extinct species. We used milk paint, we used cardboard, we mm-hmm. made it so that everything could be even, you know, not just recyclable, compostable after.
Right.
We don't always have the luxury of time or resources for that.
Right. No, it's very, very difficult to get that right. It's not an obvious thing to do.
I wish. And that's something we talk about a lot is like, is it just having the signs and the banners, or should it be, should we source the material? Can we afford the material? So, you know, we're still a young group. We're in process. We're growing. But it's something we think about a lot.
And this is part of challenging and wrestling with the toxic system that we're embedded in. You know, our choices are limited.
Right.
And, you know, of course, if we want to do the thing that we think is the least harmful, but really as things operate, even things that are least harmful are still incredibly harmful. And so it's hard to really escape that paradigm no matter what way you look at it.
Yeah. I think no matter what, you're going to have an impact. Just your doing or moving through time and space on the planet is going to have an impact. So even if it was something involving entirely organic materials, it would still be impacting that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is no completely blameless, harmless, right? Like our being is, you know, it has an impact.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think you just have to, one of the things that I think is interesting is that your mandates make it so that you're just trying to do better as you go along, and the system will get better as it goes along, hopefully.
Yeah, and that's part of not, you know, we don't blame and shame others or ourselves. Of course, we promote self-reflection and
right, and you hold yourself to a pretty high standard, I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I did want to say one thing we do.
Mm-hmm.
There is an organization in New York called Fab Scrap.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they're affiliated with the clothing recycling of the city. I'm not 100% sure on that, so don't quote me. But you can go there and volunteer for 3 hours, sort clothes, sort donated fabric into, you know, stuff that can be recycled and things that can't, things that have elastic or some kind of plastic, or those cannot be recycled, unfortunately. And then in exchange, you get 5 pounds of fabric.
Oh,
recycled fabric.
So tell me the name of that one again.
Fab Scrap.
That is an excellent resource. I think the artists listening to this will really
check out
Fab
Scrap.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to have to close it out pretty soon, but I wanted to give a chance for both Justin and Kim to give me websites and important dates and information again. So take turns.
Okay, so Extinction Rebellion's main website is rebellion.earth, and for any artists interested in the arts resources, they have a folder there called Art Assets, where there's no ownership of the arts material, so you can get our fonts, our colors, things like that. It's rebellion.earth/act-now/resources/art-group. Then for the U.S., there's extinctionrebellion.us. For New York, xrebellion.nyc.
Yeah, and our big action date is October 7th, like we said.
Right.
And we'd love to have anybody who wants to show up and do whatever they feel like doing that day. We just want to say thank yous to Brooklyn Apple and 8Ball community for hosting us and donating their space and sharing resources with us. And, you know, for us to all succeed, we have to be willing to share with each other. So we really appreciate all the help they've given us.
That's lovely. Thank you both for being on Live Culture.
Thank you so much, Martha.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. So this has been another episode of Live Culture. I'm your host, Martha Ouellette Lewis. Join me on the final Saturday of every month for a discussion about art, culture, and life. And I'm going to close out now with a song by Regina Spektor, Birdsong. Thank you, and be with you next month. Bye-bye.
Out of the quiet, out of the sunrise, I hear the bird song give way to sirens. I hear the voices give way to silence. It looks like fire, but it's just sunshine. Waters are rising, forests are burning. Hearts always hurt more while they are learning. Saying goodbye to the ones they have come from. Saying goodbye to the ones they have run from. Out of the sirens might come the birdsong. Out of the silence might come
all the news that's fit to print, and Democracy Dies in Darkness, two taglines of two major American news organizations, the New York Times and the Washington Post. WPKN is proud to offer digital subscriptions to both publications. Become a monthly sustaining supporter at $15 per month, and you can have your pick of either paper for a one-year subscription. So if you already have the New York Times at home, consider adding the Washington Post. In the process, you're helping support WPKN, nonprofit community radio. Make your sustaining donation to WPKN today, online at WPKN.org. It will be a decision you will enjoy every single day of the year.
Ann, I'm a longtime listener of WPKN. I wanted to let you know that donating a vehicle is a really simple process. All you have to do is go to WPKN.org. You fill in a small bit of information, then submit it. For me, it took about 5 minutes to get a call back, then one follow-up call to set everything up. They were out the next day with a tow truck and took care of it all from there. If you're considering donating a car to help PKN, go for it. By donating, you avoid all the hassles of filling the vehicle yourself. Forget about the low offers, mechanical repairs, and liability issues. And not posting your phone number is also a big plus. My payment comes in the form of a tax deduction. But more than that, I get the great feeling of helping out my favorite radio station. WPKN needs our support, so it remain the independent, freeform radio station that is such a rare find today.
Hi, I'm Terry Smith, Creative Director at Franklin Streetworks. We're a nonprofit contemporary art space and cafe in Stamford, Connecticut. We curate three group exhibitions each year, and many address social issues such as immigrant rights, LGBTQ themes, and the environment. We have shown more than 350 artists from around the world, including many emerging artists who have gone on to show at major museums such as the Whitney Museum of American Art. Our exhibitions and educational programming are free and open to the public. More information is at our website, franklinstreetworks.org, or on our Facebook page.
Believing that cultural literacy is an essential element of every child's education, Creative Connections builds bridges between students worldwide by encouraging awareness, understanding, and appreciation of other cultures as well as their own. Creative Connections facilitates innovative, arts-based exchanges between classrooms in the United States and their peers around the world through the creation and exchange of art projects, interactive video conferencing, and live performances. Founded in Connecticut in 1992, Creative Connections began by working with 300 students, and now have worked with over 100,000 students in 62 countries. More info on how you and your local schools can be part of this global journey is at creativeconnections.org.
The Connecticut Association for Human Services, CAHS, believes that everyone should have the opportunity to become financially stable and successful. And through their Connecticut Adult and Youth Money School, CMS, volunteers provide free financial education classes for youth ages 16 to 24, adults and seniors ranging from budgeting to borrowing to saving and more. More information about the Adult and Youth Money School is available at www.cas.org under Programs on the homepage.
My name is Gary Anderson, and I am a volunteer tutor at Mercy Learning Center in Bridgeport. Mercy Learning Center is a not-for-profit that provides basic literacy and life skills training to low-income women using a holistic approach within a supportive environment. Since 1987, Mercy Learning Center has educated and empowered over 12,000 women. We provide part-time tutoring, full-time classroom instruction, technology education, employment and life skills training, as well as family literacy programs. All of our programs and services are free, thanks to the generous support of individuals, businesses, and community organizations. We are able to provide these services with the assistance of part-time volunteers like myself, who believe in the center's mission statement: educate a woman, educate a family. Volunteering at Mercy Learning Center is a fulfilling way of giving back to the community. And if you'd like more information about volunteer opportunities at Mercy Learning Center, you can find us online at www.mercylearningcenter.org. Visits can also be arranged by phone at 203-334-6699.
Hi, I'm Lydia Lovelace, and you're listening to WPKN Bridgeport 89.5 FM and streaming at WPKN.org.